Hi everyone, and welcome to the Research in Software Engineering group here at Microsoft Research in Redmond, USA. And I'm sitting today with Francesco. So Francesco, why don't you go ahead and tell us something about yourself?
Hi everybody, my name is Francesco Logozzo. I'm a researcher in the Programming Languages and Analysis group in Redmond. I work on code contracts. In particular, I work on the static checker for code contracts. So, and today I will give you some demo of the static checker, and also I will explain the theory behind and how it works, how checks contracts statically for you. Particularly, it's based on a theory called abstract interpretation, which has been pioneered in the 70s, late 70s, by Patrick and Radia Kuzo, and I give you some ideas of how it works. And
so before you go on, C Sharp already does everything for me. Why do I need a static checker?
Because you want some more advanced static checking, so you want, for instance, to specify more things about your program. So, for example, specify post condition. You want to specify object invariants. You want to say that some object is not null. You want to say that some parameter is greater than zero, and then you want that statically the compiler tells you yes, I know this one is never been null, or say this can be null, and then okay, maybe something wrong with the code, or maybe everything is fine. So just go and use it and see if you think it's nice.
So I think you have a pretty cool demo to show us. So
yeah,
let's get started with that.
Okay. So here I'm doing demo. Essentially, it came from some code I was writing a couple of days ago, and I'm writing a class which takes two lists of strings and interleaves them. So I have some string, let's say ABC, and I have a string 1, 2. And then I want to generate a string or the list of string A1, B2, C. And so I have already written some code to speed up the things. So I take the constructor, I take S and B, and then I save it in my in the fields of the class. And I want to write the two string methods which should output the interleaved version of the string. So I do override and then two string. And now what I do is I write down the result. It's a new string builder. Now what I do, I iterate over the stakes, equal to 0, smaller than stakes dot count, and I do I plus plus, and now what I do is I just write, save into the result, I append the two strings, so it's stakes dot stakes of I, and now I append the boxes of I. And then what I do is just to convert the string builder object to a string and return it. So return this to string.
All right, so that's pretty straightforward.
It's just pretty straightforward. Good. Now, okay, so the compiler. Now what I want to do is, okay, just there is some warning here. Okay, I forgot some parentheses, sorry about that. So it's just pretty straightforward code and seems to be more or less correct.
C-sharp is happy.
C-sharp,
no
the compiler
worries.
Is happy, says nothing. You know, I had some syntax error and just correct it, just warned. And now we can run it and we are compiling. And after compilation, we also run the static checker. And now, you see, I get some warning. So what's the same?
So these warnings are provided by your tool.
Yes.
You need to go and download the tool from DevLabs
exactly.
To try it out.
Exactly, you can just go, it's for free, you take VSTS and you download in your VSTS distribution and you enjoy it. And we have a forum, so you can write on the forum and we interact and fix bugs. So, okay, so here I have this guy. Oh, we changed. And, okay, so what he's saying is complaining about the fact that stakes, the field stakes can be null, because what we do in the constructor, we take S and we just save in some field, but this may be null, so is something which is missing. So what here we want is an object invariant. Essentially what we want to say is that the field stakes is never null, and the same it's for the field boxes, never contains a null object. So I'm going to add an object invariant here. So this is the syntax that we use. So it's just another method in which I write the invariant, and now I say okay, what I want stakes to be different from null, and then invariant.
The invariant is a method, an instance method,
yes,
with this contract invariant.
Exactly. And essentially it states what intuitively the properties that are true in all the stable states of your class. So here in particular, in this example, I wanted stakes and boxes are two fields which are never null. This is something I cannot say, for instance, in C sharp today. Now, once I add it, now I can compile, and again it's compiling, and I get some warning from, again, from the tool. Now it's compiling to the fact that it cannot prove that stakes is always different from null at the end of the constructor. And the reason is because I may pass null, and then I have to check it is different from null, but this is
we never check that the input is null.
Yes, exactly. So how can I do it? I can either add some parameter validation, saying, okay, if it is not null, throw an exception. I can do it in a nicer way by putting a precondition, and so pushing the checking, essentially, to the caller, to the one that instantiate, creates an instance of this field. And the tool also, it's nice because it suggests you say, so look, you want to add some precondition, so that B and S are different from null. So let's go, let's add them. So I say S is different from null. And then say that B is different from null.
And the contract type is part of the code contracts API then?
Yes, which is available in MS Core Lib from starting from version 4. And if you have other version, you can just download our tools and then you'll be provided with the contract library and start using. And
excellent.
It's also mentioned that this is for static checking, but you can also use it for runtime checking, and you can also use it for test automatic test generation with tools as specs. So there are plenty of advantages for it. Okay, so now I add the precondition. So essentially I'm saying S and B are not null. I compile again. And now the tool should be more or less happy, except for one warning here. It just says that it cannot prove that, sorry about that. It cannot prove that I is in the bounds. And now think, what is the error? The error is essentially that for what I want to do is I want to interleave these two list, and I have one constraint in my mind which I haven't written here, which essentially is that the stakes should be one more than the boxes, because otherwise I get some error. And again, this is something which I'm going to specify in the object invariant. So what I want to say is that contract.invariant that the stakes.count should be equal to the boxes.count plus one. And this, of course, it's also some relation which should hold when I instantiate the method, so this should be also a precondition in for the constructor. So I add it as a precondition, so I say that s.count is equal to boxes b.count plus 1. And I run it again, and now, of course, the tool is giving me again another warning because I have off by one error in this two string. Because as now they differ by one, I should not index boxes to the index stakes.count minus one. But it's at most stakes.count minus two. So I have to add the guy here. And so I have to change my
loop. So these are pretty subtle bugs.
Yeah, they are subtle bugs which may or may not show with the testing. And which, yeah, just saying this. Essentially, I also bug that I found in my own code. That's why I decided to give this example. Because you write like this, I say, oh, it should be like that, and then you run a certain point, there is a crash, you say, oh my god, why? Let's run the tool. I say, oh, we cannot prove it. So that's the bug. And also for inferring it, for this coming, those kind of invariants, we need some form of advanced reasoning. Because for instance, in this particular case, for the two string method, in order to find the off by one, the tool needs to find some loop invariant, which is. And the way in which it infers loop invariant is something I want to tell you later in this talk, in this interview. So let's finish fixing the code. Now I want to say, okay, we append, and now we have to append the last element of stakes, which is stakes.count minus one. And now I build, and the tool should be happy. And it's coming down, coming back. Okay, it's happy.
Now it's saying that it validated
it all the contracts. So essentially it validates all a bunch of stuff. It validates either the contracts, both the contracts that you put in your code, so it's precondition, postcondition, assertion, and object invariance, but also it validates some implicit obligations. So for instance, when you do reference an object, you have to want to check if this object is not null.
These are the contracts from the runtime.
The contract from the runtime, yes, exactly.
Excellent.
And you can enable or disable these checks. So we have some integration with Visual Studio, which allows you to tune up which kind of checks you want performed.
So Francesco, how does it work?
Okay, now I have to go to the whiteboard. So it's the most interesting, maybe the most boring part.
All right, so Francesco, how does this work? I know it's the third time you're explaining it to me, but...
No, it's okay. It's going to work. So as I said, it's based on abstract interpretation. So it's this theory of late 70s. And the idea is essentially to execute a program on some non-standard set of values, which are called abstract domain. I'll show you how it works on a simple example, which is a slightly more simple example than the one I showed before. What we have is a method foo, which takes as a parameter an integer n. And then we have a precondition that we express with this contract that requires, which requires that n is strictly greater than 0. This, in a way, it's the old school, if n is smaller equal than 0, then throw some exception. Then we set x to 0, y to 2. We iterate until x is equal to n, and we increment x and we increment y. And what we want to do is we want to prove that after the loop, so when we reach this point, y is equal to x plus 2, and x is non-negative. In order to prove this assertion, we need to infer some loop invariant for this problem. And I'm going to show you how it works.
So what do you call loop invariant? Just
loop
quickly.
Loop invariant is some property which holds at this point and at the point, the exit point of the loop. So it's something which is true through all the iterations of the loop.
Okay.
So we start the execution, this form of symbolic execution from this point. Okay, here we don't know anything. Then we have the required. So now we know that n is greater to 0. Then we go there and we have that x is equal to 0 and y is equal to 2. So let me write down what we know. X is equal to 0. And y equal to 2.
And n is greater than 0.
And n is greater than 0. Then we go inside the loop. Why we go inside the loop? Because we know that n is strictly greater than 0 and x is equal to 0. So there's at least one iteration of the loop, which is done. And we increment both x and y. So x becomes equal to 1 and y becomes equal to 3. And n stays the same because it does not change. So let me forget about n. Straightforward, never change. Now the problem is that we have to find a compact representation for this set of values, x equals 0 and y equal 2, and x equals 1 and y equals 3, which are the set of values at this program point here, after one iteration of the loop or before entering the loop. Now let me show you how we can do it in a graphical form, so which is more clear than some algebra. What we know, at the first iteration, or better, before the first iteration, is that x is 0 and y is 2. So if I'm going to draw it on a plane, it becomes this dot here. After one iteration of the loop, now we know that x became 1 and y became 3. Okay, so this one is wrong. Of course, y was 2 at the beginning. And we want some form of compact representation for these two points, which, in a way, it's the segment, so it's this guy here. And how can read it algebraically? We know that, essentially, let me delete your stuff here. We have that y is between 2 and 3. X is between 0 and 1. But also we have a relation between the values of x and y, which are given by the line that passes through those two points. And this y is equal to x plus 2. And so we have this abstract state. And now we do another iteration of the loop, which x again gets increased, y gets increased. So what we have, now we know that x is between 1 and 2, and y, as it's increased, it's between 3 and 4.
So you added 1 to the interval, and
yes,
then
exactly.
There's standard operations on intervals. Operation.
So essentially, one thing, it is not standard values, because instead of having single values, now we are doing operation on intervals. So essentially, we have a set of values which we are abstracting by the smallest possible value and the largest possible value. So those are called intervals. And also, we keep some relation between the values of x and value of y. And this is some linear equalities.
Right.
And the combination of the two, we call it subpolyhedra, which is some research paper you can find on my own page if you want to have some fun.
Sounds fun.
And okay, so again, this is still true. This, because I increment y now is y plus 1, x is x plus 1, so it's still true that doing some basic simplification that y is equal to x plus 2. So again, we go there, and now we have to give a compact representation for these two guys. Let's go again to the board. So the lane still remains the same, and what changed are the intervals. So now we have also, these are new point. This one. So now the representation is essentially still the same lane, but with larger upper bounds. So x here gets the value between 0 and 2, and y gets the value between 2 and 4. Let me write here. And I can delete this one, was the previous iteration. And now we are at our second iteration, and we go on, and we go on, and we go on. And if you go like that, we never terminate, because the upper bound is always growing between x becomes 0, 1, 0, 2, 0, 3, 0, 4, and go plus infinity. So we want it to stabilize. We cannot have the checker to run for an infinite amount of time. So we have to do what is called, in literature and technical terms, is called the winding. Essentially, we have to extrapolate the succession of the limit of the sequence of intervals. And let's do it geometrically. How we do it? Essentially, what we are doing, we are always adding one new segment. So what we can do is just going to a plus infinity, essentially extrapolate the upper bound for both x and y, setting it to be to plus infinity. So let's write here plus infinity. Let me write it a bit larger. So we have these open intervals now. And now we guess that this is the loop invariant, but we have to prove it. In order to prove it, we have to do one final iteration in order to see that it eventually stabilizes. So we take this loop invariant, we go there, now we get that x is between 1 and plus infinity, and y is between 3 and plus infinity, and y is equal to x plus 2, because it's always the same. So this loop invariant is weaker than this, so we are stable. So we can forget about it, and now we have our loop invariant, which is essentially a property which is true.
When you enter and leave the loop.
And now, using this information, I can prove my two assertions. Why I can prove my two assertions? Because the first one says, okay, y is equal to x plus 2, and I have y equal x plus 2. So I can prove it, just straightforward. And then I have x greater equal to 0, and then I know that x is greater than 0, and then I can prove it. So we are happy. We can prove the two assertions. And in general, we can also prove more complex things. We can prove, for instance, let's say x is equal to n at the end of the loop, and whatever you want, more or less.
Excellent. Thank you, Francesco, for the demo. And
thank you to you.
If anybody has questions about static analysis, I guess they can go to the forums.
Yeah, you can go to the forums, send email. If you have feedback on code contracts, please use forums, use our email, whatever. We're happy to hear from you, and yeah, have fun.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.